everyone, and welcome to The Dive, Season 8, Episode 10. We are fresh off playoffs, and we also have the new Skarner update that just got announced. I know Flowers is ridiculously excited about. He was talking, tucking my ear off yesterday about it.
It's Christmas for him. He had the Skarner update. He got the Ornn idea for the skin going through. Everything.
Yeah, the Skarner update actually looks pretty crazy. I haven't watched really any videos on it or anything. I've just kind of like talked to Flowers about it and watched and seen the actual just like abilities themselves. It sounds like it's going to be insanely OP to me just based off the E. Like the E is sounding kind of crazy. The E is like some combo of like Kayn alt, Sion alt, and like Poppy E or something. Like,
yeah,
it seems absolutely wild. The ulti now can grab multiple people, but I know it's a cast time, so maybe it's like a lot less reliable unless you have setup for it. Yeah. But it sounds like this champion is going to be actually crazy. And I know Flowers got to like test it out, and he was telling me that he thinks it took Skarner from one of like the worst pre-6 gankers into probably like the best pre-6 ganker in the game. And he was saying like you could do gank paths that like Rek'Sai and Jarvan and Zac and stuff can't even pull off. That it's like almost impossible to ward this champion out and stuff. So it sounds like it's pretty crazy. And I know he thinks it's going to be like guaranteed huge and competitive. Hmm. With just the way that some of these unique abilities work, though, I'm already like, is this champion going to come out, be super OP, get turbo nerfed, and then never be seen again? Like,
I mean, it could. I was looking at it, and I don't know. Obviously, I've only like looked at the abilities and saw the gameplay they showed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to be that OP for the reason that he just doesn't seem like a very strong duelist. He kind of looks like Nunu to me, where I think in solo queue, the E looks really good because, yeah, like Nunu, people just, they don't think about where the jungler is, and they first think about it when he's on their screen, right? And whether it's a Skarner charging at you through the wall or a big snowball hitting you, it's rough, right? But in competitive, the thing is, you almost always at least have some idea of where the jungler is. You either know exactly where he is, or you know if there's a chance you're going to be ganked by him, right? Mm-hmm. And so like the hardest ganks to ward for are like lane ganks or tower dives or something. So I don't know if his ability to like have really crazy pass through the walls is going to matter that much. But I mean, obviously it's just first impression. He's not even out yet. Could definitely be wrong on that. His cooldowns look really long though. So I feel like his dueling is going to be kind of bad. He seems a bit like Zac to me in that way, mm-hmm, where if he came out right now, I mean, obviously, unless his numbers are crazy overtuned, I wouldn't expect him to be that good in pro.
I know he has HP scaling on like every ability as, mm-hmm, well, so he definitely seems like they want him to be like tank jungler type thing. So,
yeah,
you know, kind of to your comparison with Zac.
And at the beginning too, Flowers, because he's been, you know, in the process since the beginning, he was talking about how the changes to the ultimate, he was actually worried for them because he was like, well, people can flash it now. Even though you can grab multiple people. But it still sounded like that would be an impactful ultimate if you're getting multiple flashes and you're threatening multiple people. So I guess we'll have to get some playtime on it.
Yeah, he was comparing it to me to kind of like, I was like, okay, so is it like Briar E channel? And he's like, well, it's like a faster Briar E, you know, like, so you kind of have to channel it up and then sling them out or whatever. So it definitely sounds like you need some sort of setup to be able to like reliably hit this, maybe unless you're like directly on top of the person. So the ult definitely sounds weaker. But like from what he was saying, he basically felt like they took power out of the ult and put it into a lot of the basic abilities. Like they felt like he was a lot stronger earlier and with,
yeah, I mean, dude, I don't know how Flowers has stayed a Skarner main for as long as he has, because that champion is so bad. Like Freak said, he was the lowest play rate champ when he was here.
Yeah.
And for good reason. This champion is so painful to play right now, dude. It's like they got rid of Dominion, but they kept it alive in Skarner. It's like you have these random crystals. Yeah. I'm so glad they're getting rid of that. Like, because I was actually a Skarner main in season 2. I first broke into high elo spamming Skarner. So I have a soft spot for the champion, but he has been so bad for so long that I'm excited for him to at least be playable.
I do agree. Like, if that's the general design philosophy, though, of take power out of ult and put into the regular part of the kit, then I am happy and excited to see, like, if they actually accomplish that, because, yeah, I think that is a good design direction for it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to speak for the designers, but at least this is what Flowers' impression was, right? I don't know if that's words from their mouth or his, but, you know, yeah, because I do think it makes sense, right? Because when you hear about champions like this, and I mean, I think of Melzahar is kind of in the same vein, like Melzahar Skarner, where it's like, really, when people think about it, it's like you pick this champion just to lock someone down, and then they build QSS, and then you're like, okay, what do I do now?
Make them pay the tax.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, you make them pay the tax, and then beyond that, sometimes you're not really able to do too much. So I think it is cool that Skarner's getting the update. Definitely excited to see how that works out. I know Flowers also said he was gonna have to like learn some Ornn because he was so excited about the train conductor skin that's coming out.
That was fun. That was cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. Because after I was like, oh, so you're gonna actually play some different champions? You're gonna play something Ornn? He's like, bro, I'm gonna reach out to the one tricks and I'm gonna learn the combos and stuff. I'm gonna play some Ornn. So he's gonna be in there. I know he's gonna be excited about the update too. So definitely. Good week for Flowers.
What is the last time where Flowers actually learned a new champ? Because he's played only Skarner, Master Yi, and Wukong for 8 years.
Yeah, he played Xin for a little bit, I know.
Yeah.
It's rarely branched out. He had a Warwick arc. He was doing some Warwick for a while. I know he used to play Leona support a bit. He doesn't have a lot of champions that he's played. I've seen the man play like 5 champions total, and I've... Uh-huh. Been playing League with him for like 8 years. Yeah. So
and they're all pretty old champs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, dude, like where's the Yone's and the, no, that,
the whoa, whoa. Ways?
Flowers is not a mechanics champ. He's
also he has a lot of hatred, I guess, for a lot of a lot of those types of champs. You know, he's like, no anime champs, no this champ, no that type of champ.
No anime. That's funny. I remember when I first met Flowers, we bonded over our mutual like hate for Ivern.
Yeah. See, he's got a lot of champs are on his no list.
Yeah, it's actually so funny sometimes when I'm playing League with him, he's like, sometimes he'll just dodge based off champ select. He's like, they got this champ, and it's like, okay, well, what do you want me to ban Flowers? I'm like, all right, Vayne, and then like, Vayne, you ban out Vayne, and then they pick Morgana. He's like, can't play this one. Be a dodge, you know? And then it's like, next game you're gonna ban Vayne and Morgana, and then they pick Kayn. He's like, don't think I'm gonna play this one. You know, it's just he's out of there.
That's funny.
His list is growing for sure, and it has a lot of new champs on it. Yeah. of all the ones he doesn't like playing against.
That's really funny.
As Skarner. All right, well, playoffs obviously kicked off this week. We had the big playoffs week. 4 days was obviously Thursday through Sunday. This week, if you didn't know, I'm just repeating it because I know last week we showed on broadcast the schedule nonstop. We did it this time as well, but I still saw one of the top comments on the was people saying, I watched every day of playoffs. I didn't even know it was on Thursday and Friday. So this week is going to be on Friday and Saturday. It is not on Sunday.
We're keeping people guessing. Thursday here.
there's the Valorant Global Finals, and I know they don't have leagues overlap when there's a big global final. So we're not going to be on Sunday. So it will be Friday, Saturday. But we had Fly TL. We kind of had like a bit of a sandwich week for playoffs, and we had the bread. We're the 3-0s. You know, the bread's there. But then we had some good meat, some 5-game series in the middle. Fly TL, 100 Thieves played C9, then 100 Thieves played NRG, and then we had TL versus Dig as well.
Man, the best of five ones too. It wasn't like they were some best of fives where you're just like, oh, you know, one team's winning a whole bunch and the other team's winning a whole bunch. They were. I felt like almost every single game was competitive. Mm-hmm. There were really like back and throw all over the place. Of course, there were a bunch of Baron steals and stuff like that. That always helps with those. But they felt so exciting as best of fives. It wasn't kind of like best of five in name only.
Yeah. You mean 5-game series, right?
Yeah. Full 5-game series.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. We could start with C9 100 Thieves, I guess, because that was the first one. That was the first slice of bread. C9... came back.
Start with the bread.
Bit of a stomp.
Start with the bread. It was a bit of a stomp. I mean, they got absolutely blasted. There's not really much else to say. And I know it was like, this was coming off of all these pros doing interviews and on podcasts and on Hotline League and, you know, on stage interviews, everyone saying 100 Thieves are frauds. And then they come out and they get super stomped in their first series against C9. which was definitely, you know, bad for that narrative, I guess, for the 100 Thieves side. But C9 looked really good. And I also thought it was cool that they played so heavily around Fudge and his picks. I know I talked to Fudge afterwards, and he was doing some stuff with us. He cast the next day with us and whatnot. And he was saying he was kind of trying to be, like, more selfish with his picks for himself, you know, and really wanted to be able to, like, he felt like he could be the win condition, and he really was in that series, right? You know, he played a lot of matchups that were counterpick matchups. He played like the Jackson Aatrox, he played ADTF in Aatrox, and I can't even remember what the third one was, but he was absolutely renekting. Yeah. He was absolutely stomping Sniper, it felt like, in that one, and had such a big impact. But honestly, across the map, it just felt like 100 Thieves couldn't get anything going. And this was, I think, the C9 team that everyone was super excited about, right? Like, even the Lucian Nami game they played, where they, like, got early dives going on, and they got massively ahead there. Meech was down, like, a full item to Berserker. Berserker was going crazy on Lucian Nami. This was, like, the C9 that was kind of promised.
Yeah, that was crazy. The fact that they stomped with Lucian Nami after this champ.
It's like I shouted you out when they picked it.
I heard about that, yeah, yeah. It's like that gif of the dog that's like limping and then stands up straight and like walks off normally. Cause yeah, this was for sure not the team we saw in the regular season. And I mean, Lucian Nami too, when I saw that, I was like, oh boy. I mean, this whole draft, all the drafts were kind of worrying me for C9, at least the first two, like Fudge picking TF top. I was thinking, ooh, like, is that a good idea, guys? It just requires a lot of execution, but they executed really well. Super cool to see. I don't know, maybe we shouldn't say they're back, because that seems to curse them every time, but
they're back.
They look great.
I mean, the biggest thing for me was that in some of the ones where, you know, it was their back, it wasn't every player playing well again. This series was like, whoa, Cloud9, these are the players that you would expect from the name brand power that they signed to, you know, to this roster. The bottom lane was playing so much better. The Fudge point I really like, because afterwards he was also talking a little bit more about why they decided to go for that. And it was pretty interesting hearing, because in the past people have been criticizing Sniper and they're just like, oh, you know, he's young and, you know, he just doesn't learn concepts super fast, or he doesn't, you know this, or it's just other top laners that seem a little jealous. But he was like, well, Sniper's actually really good when he's in 1v1 scenarios and he has a winning matchup, or he has an opportunity to outplay you in isolation. Mm-hmm. But what they wanted to do was put a lot of resources into putting him into situations where he's at a disadvantage, either behind or disadvantage with jungle pathing or splitting jungle matchups. Yeah. And it was extremely effective, because they felt like he was so good at maximizing wins but not good at minimizing losses. So it was really interesting to hear the little bit of extra information. I was actually like kind of surprised that even he went into that detail.
Yeah, yeah. Impact was basically saying the same thing in an interview recently about him, because it felt like at the beginning of the split, everyone was like, he's not that good, he's not going to do anything. And now people are having to give him a look.
Like, all right, he's kind of good at something.
Okay, maybe when he's ahead, he's pretty good. But like Impact, I thought, actually gave him quite a bit of credit in an interview I heard. Where he was basically saying, yeah, like, he's actually really good at playing like the 1v1. He's really good at playing like anything aggressive. And he's like, you know, good at finding angles and stuff to do things that you wouldn't always expect people to look for, because you almost have to be like, it's risky, right, to go for it. But yeah, he's not good at losing gracefully. So I think C9 planned well around that. And this was a really impressive series from them. We could talk maybe more about 100 Thieves. We could just jump into the next 100 Thieves series.
I think 100 Thieves would prefer if we did that.
Yeah. Yeah, we could talk about 100 Thieves from that angle.
That was the warm-up for them.
Yeah. So their scrim day didn't go so hot. But in the loser's bracket, they had a 5-game banger against Energy, where they did come out on top. And Quid looked insane in this series. My man was Chovy Jr. here.
That was our dive cast.
Yeah, that was actually a really fun one. He was so good in that series. He won player of the series, if I recall correctly. I thought he was just so incredibly impressive, you know, in this series, that it was like, it's kind of a weird one, because he was at a non-factor against JoJo, and then he absolutely turbo mega super gapped Palafox, and you're like, okay, did he play way better? Did Palafox play way worse? Is it both? Is it like a matchup thing? You know, because this was like complete night and day, right?
Well, Palafox has been playing.
Palafox had a rough one.
Really poorly, just to his own standards too. This is not something where everyone is throwing stuff, you know, out of the blue. He hasn't been feeling good about his play either. But I just feel like this whole series was the narrative saving series, because you mentioned the fraud allegations at 100 Thieves that after the Cloud9 series, everyone was like, uh-oh, they're true. Then this one saved that narrative because 100 Thieves still looks really good. They bounced back. Mm-hmm. Then they also had like the you know, River was a little sick in the other one before. And so not only the Quid bounce back, but the team overall, because I know a lot of people put Quid for MVP, and it would be a bad look if they got eliminated from playoffs.
0-6 in playoffs.
If they got 0-6
in the MVP combo.
And then because the MVP votes always come out after, even though they're regular season awards. Yeah. And then it would come out after they're
eliminated. I always find that a little strange, I guess, as a spectator, because I feel like you should do the awards before playoffs. If they're not going to include playoffs, right?
My pitch has been for a few years, and I pitched this to Mark again, so maybe it'll happen sometime, is that there should be regular season awards that come out right after regular season, and then we should also do a finals MVP at finals. Because mm-hmm. I think it's cool to like have that, you know, that have that happen at a big event. But when the regular season MVP is given at finals, and that person who won it had like a crash and burn playoffs, it's definitely a bad feeling, and I feel like it just almost stirs up hate around that player instead of like a celebration for that player, which is what it's meant to be, right? Because it's a regular season award. You could absolutely turbo smurf in regular season, deserve the award, win it, and then be awful in playoffs and get slammed, and then it's like you're on final stage, and it's like,
well, I mean, last year it wasn't exactly like that, but I mean, JoJo won MVP, right? And his team was nowhere to be found. That one didn't feel so much like
people were. I think people were still like, oh, okay, JoJo.
Yeah, yeah. Like he played well. I think it is always the conversation with MVP where like you want to try to separate the player's performance from the team's performance.
Yeah.
Because you know you're not always in the same situations. If you're on the best team, you're not being challenged the same way as if you're on the worst team. You're just the whole way it plays out is different. So I feel like it's hard to do. But you want to try to just look at every player and what situation they're in, and then how do they perform according to, like, you know, what you would expect from a player in that situation. So it's tough, but
yeah. 100 Thieves in this one, though, obviously game one was the energy win. That was like a really competitive game. Game two, I feel like, was like a little bit closer, but 100 Thieves started to pull away with it. Game three was like an absolute stomp. And then game four was like, the series is over. And then just this crazy series of events happens where, I mean, they were up, what, 6K with, I want to say, two inhibitors open and like a split push advantage and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, this game looked so, so over, even Jax and what late game. And then there's the Baron steal and then crazy fight mid lane. Palafox gets a 3 or 4 man all. There's like all these things happened for them to come back. And you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was the Baron steal into sniper teleporting bottom to try and end the game, and then overstaying on bottom into the rest of energy coming back from the stolen Baron and catching him, and then leading into Palafox hitting three people with the ultimate. So it was like this, you're watching the crazy chain of events, and it's like this really rare timeline branch that went off in their favor. And it was even more crazy because Palafox had whiffed like 5 Nico ults before in mm-hmm. this game over and over and over. And then boom, he hits the one that matters and he catches all of them and they end the game off of it.
And they won the game down gold, which is really rare. Really, really rare.
This is one of the only teams that's done that. I remember them doing that last year also. They did that before.
Yeah.
It's super rare. I feel like it's always this team.
It's so funny because it's like when you win the game, you kill all these additional towers going into the base, right? Kill the next towers. You do all these things. You get all this objective gold. It's like game one, energy wins, up 9.6K. Game two, 100 Thieves wins, 8.5K. Game three, plus 14.5K. Game four, negative 1,600. And then game five, unfortunately, was absolute stomp again. I think 100 Thieves were clearly the better team in this because they dominated in the games they won in. They were 16.5K lead when they actually won this final game.
Yeah, well, the game five pacing was it was really like slow, intense in the beginning, and then it just kind of all broke open with I think that one play in Bottom River where who he just kind of sent it.
Oh,
remember, he was just
walking and he got super poked out,
and he just kept going, throws a hook, and nothing died.
Everyone's super split as well. I remember it was like FBI or was it? I'm trying to think. Yeah, I guess it was like FBI was split with contracts, I think, or no, it was FBI and Palafox, I guess, were like on one side to the left of the blue buff, and everyone else was on the other side, and they got like engaged on by the like Nocturne Ari and stuff, I think, on the left, kind of split from everyone else. But yeah, that fight definitely kind of broke it open. But it's definitely a really disappointing series for Energy as well. Pretty disappointing year. They were the champions in summer, so they were trying to defend their title,
and they were the champions of the hearts of all the NA fans at Worlds.
Yeah,
true. I mean, they beat G2. That's like,
I'll always love them for that.
Exactly, dude. Like, we can never take that away from them. That is definitely something to watch every day.
It is. I mean, it was such a crazy series, and I just felt like Palafox and Contracts in particular went Super Saiyan at Worlds. Like, they were so good. And, you know, there was even like LPL and LCK junglers saying like they were trying to watch the VODs and learn from the Jarvan, and like Contracts is going crazy. And so it is really weird to see a team go from that to the best performing Western team at Worlds to having this incredibly high to then, you know, struggling through the regular season, limping their way into playoffs, arguably. Some people think, you know, Shopify was even doing better at the time. It's like Shopify could have maybe even stolen their spot. Then, you know, you lose in that first round lower bracket and you're just out, right? Mm-hmm. So definitely a big fall off from where they wanted to be to where they, you know, actually ended up. I expected them to definitely do a lot better. You know, even when we were talking, I remember in like power rankings before the season, we're like, oh, well, maybe they'd start a bit slow because they took some time off. But like everyone kind of thought this team would ramp up and be able to get where they wanted to go.
I think most of us put them as like
second or
top
something.
Two or maybe three lowest. Yeah, that, I mean, the result definitely isn't great. I feel like, I don't know. I hope their team doesn't make any massive changes going into summer. Like, I think obviously like we never know what's going on internally with teams. I think like watching them, it seemed like it never fully clicked. It seemed like they were still trying to figure out exactly how they wanted to play. And that can honestly be a big reason why teams look really shaky on stage, is because, like, you know, everyone's got a default, like how you just play normally if nothing's being said, right? But then sometimes players' defaults don't line up that well with their teammates. And so then you have to put a lot of time and effort into figuring out, okay, like, what's going to work for us? And then you're focused on that so much that maybe some of the other good habits you have like fall to the wayside. And it just takes time to like get back into the groove where you're working as like, you know, a cohesive unit.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of people were wondering about the conversation of the run replacement that they did do this year and changing Huhi, and everyone was generally very positive on it. But even at the beginning, there were, you know, people talking about how, oh, it is a lot more difficult than they thought it was going to be to incorporate his shot calling, because he's a lot different than Ignar in that, you know, not only default type of play but also being vocal.
Yeah, that can be a huge part for sure. Maybe it's conflicting styles. I try to not speculate too much on things that we have no way of knowing, because the worst thing you could do is, I think, like, give a false narrative to a player, like sitting here being like, oh yeah, like who he's ruining the team, he's like trying to make everyone play his way, but then in reality is you could listen to it and he's just not doing anything, he's just like doing his best to fit into the team. So we really have no idea. So not gonna speculate on that, but I mean, they were close, right? Like, it was a 3-2. They had some good moments. I respected the fact that even though it was such a tough situation for them, you know, they're coming off of like looking super weak in the Super Week. sorry, I just had to make that one.
Again? Yeah.
Again, yeah. I'm going to keep making it too.
I was just laughing more at how much you enjoyed it. Like,
yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I'm going to keep doing it. But the fact that they were able to bounce back, like, they looked a bit lifeless in some of their losses. And even game 4, like, they were basically dead.
They were dead.
They were just a corpse, like being dragged across the rift. But then somehow, like they resurrected.
They reanimated.
Yeah, yeah, they reanimated. So I feel like that to me shows a lot of promise, because it's so hard in those situations where you're just getting slammed repeatedly. It's easy to just give up, be like,
yeah,
all right, they're better, yeah. FF, right? Yeah. But they kept fighting. You know, we've seen them look really good before, so I don't know. I want to give them some credit for sure, because even though the placement wasn't great, you know, that's not the only thing that matters. They can for sure bounce back next split.
I mean, it's obviously not ideal to have a reputation for being able to win games when down gold and have to have these huge comebacks. You don't want to have to, but it is really impressive, because that's super rare in League to be able to make big comebacks and play from behind. And it's always like this team, like we've been saying, like Contrax is always looking for game winning plays. Even they're behind, you know, 8,000-10,000 gold. They're willing to do these like full send, go for a, you know, the unexpected
Baron Steals.
Very small, very small chance play.
How many?
And boom, and they get him.
How many were Baron Steals, though? Like, it.
Contrax had so many.
Yeah, I mean, there was a stat. He was one behind Xsmithie for all time Baron Steals.
17 Baron Steals in the LCS now. Xsmithie has 18.
Excuse me. Yeah, so. Like, to me, that kind of comeback kind of feels, it's a steal. Like, not only do you steal the Baron, you stole the game from that. It's not like you outplayed your opponent. Melee, you just
robbery. But there were, I remember clearly one from before when they were still CLG, and it wasn't a steal. It was them sending three people up into a brush, and they got a pick. And like, so they've done this, like, sometimes steals, a lot of steals. But also, going
a lot of steals.
Sometimes steals. There was quite a few steals. A lot of steals. Okay, there were steals.
But there's also some picks. You know, like I feel like those are the two like main. If you're super far behind, like how are you going to get back into this? Well,
steal objective, get a
pick. It's these two surprise plays.
Yep.
Yeah,
for sure. Also, gotta say shout out to the coach cams. The coach cams for playoffs have been so good, especially in this series. Get going from, you know, like the 100 Thieves coaching staff, just absolute joy to think hard, just complete devastation.
He's swearing as he stands up out of the camera.
What the? And then his head's out of the frame. That was very funny. The coach cams definitely are amazing. Yeah. We can jump ahead to Fly TL, which was another five-game banger. And this one, I felt, was actually like really close. This one to me was closer than the 100 Thieves Energy one, which feels weird to say, but I felt like the games were kind of more competitive in the wins and the losses. So this one was, I think, a really, really exciting series. I thought in the loss, Yon was playing very, very well for TL. But FlyQuest definitely happy. This was also the super trash talk one where it was like APA and Jensen were just going at it.
That was so fun
in all chat. And I felt like APA actually got in their head. There was the one Ziggs game where they were like 3 and 4 manning up top over and over. Then they tried to do a 5-man no minion dive bot to
kill him,
and then all died for it. Like this was a crazy series.
It was good. Yeah, I feel like they were getting in each other's heads. They were, honestly, yeah. APA and Jensen both, you could tell the way they were playing. They really cared about wanting to win, so you can talk shit. Because, I mean, we've all played solo queue. I think most League players have gotten into some kind of argument with another player. And, like, there's nothing, there's no game you want to win more than the game where you have some toxic guy on your team who loses you the game, and then you queue up again and he's on the other team. Like, there is no more motivation to want to win a game. And like, you're
locked in.
Yeah, like you're gonna pull out all the stops. You're gonna pull out your A game. And I feel like that's kind of what we saw with that. It was really funny the way Jensen was saying, like, it wasn't just the trash talk. He's like getting flamed by a bad player.
Yeah, Jensen went nuclear in the interview after, and then on Twitter and whatnot.
His tweet was so funny. How does a gold player do
in the LCS? And he's like, I guess they don't. Whatever.
Oh, that was really funny. Yeah, I mean, dude, we need more of that, though. Like, I love that so much. As a spectator, it's so easy. That's like a genuine rivalry that gets created. We see all these fake rivalries that they try to manufacture and no one buys into it, but this is real. Like, this is raw. So good. Yeah. Absolutely. Hope we see
born out of natural, relatable League of Legends content of all chat too. Like that's that's where your solo queue grudges come from. Also, the exact same spot. It was really good too because they had Impact and APA on the pros episode afterwards, and APA was talking about it, or Jan was on there with him and Sven, and APA was talking about it, and he was like, for sure. It doesn't detract my focus at all. And Sven was like, are you sure? It was like, you're not thinking as soon as they're diving you, you're like immediately keyboard warrior. And he's like, no. I'm full focus. It's distracting them. It's only distracting them. You know, I can handle it.
Cap. Yeah. Cap.
That's for sure. Especially after the next series where I thought APA played way better. Because he wasn't actually that good in this FlyQuest series. He was kind of getting dunked on by
Yeah, he was a little bit.
I felt like he was in his own head, too.
I mean, well, the funniest one to me was when Jensen got solo killed by APA in the bot lane. Ziggs, and he just walked into every one of Ziggs' spells and died. I was like, that's not what Jensen normally does when he's playing the game. Like,
he was seeing red for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you remember, it was after that game that Jensen fully stopped saying anything in all chat and stopped typing and everything too. So I feel like after that game, that was the moment to deafen mute.
I am sure the coaches after that game, because that game was actually crazy to watch. Like, felt for sure. Basically, APA was the matador and FlyQuest was the bull that game, man. They were actually just chasing him around the map. At times, that made no sense. There was nothing to get for killing him, and they're sending five people. It was actually crazy. I felt like, for sure, after that game, the Nuke Duck was just like, all right, everyone's all chat is just disabled. No one's allowed to type anymore. Because that one was nuts, actually.
Yeah, I mean, as a spectator, you love it every time. If I was on a team with someone who's doing that, it's like the only way I would be cool with it is if they were for sure 100% not affected by it. Like, even when they're taking L's, they can laugh about it, right? Yeah. But like, if you're actually getting affected by it, like you're genuinely changing the way you play and getting emotional about it, like you should just mute 100%. Like, it is so not worth it as the player. But I mean, I'm as the audience, like, yeah, go for it.
It's just so natural for APA now. He's been trash talking so long, it doesn't take any focus. It just comes out.
He's put so much practice over the years into typing it's just.
Did we ever?
Doesn't have to think about it. He's just in the flow state. He's trash talking.
The flow state trash talk.
I mean, people were telling me that he was doing this even in, like, tier three, right? Yeah. Like, he was doing this in collegiate, and he's doing it in amateur. He's doing it everywhere,
even solo queue, if this you can
guy,
believe that.
Whoa!
This guy is just a typer.
He does it on his off days.
if League doesn't work out, definitely Speed Racer world champion for sure. Type Racer, excuse me.
For this series, though, I felt like, you know, beyond the entertainment factor, everyone had a super fun time watching this. I think a lot of credit should go to Masu. Masu just performed so well for being a rookie in playoffs. In the last game, 11-1-12 on Varus, and full 5-game series. He was playing fasted as well. And he like goes Omega, especially in game number 5 after it's a long, you know, super long day. I thought that was really impressive. And apparently, you know, checking out on the all chat and with observers and stuff, it was like the top side of FlyQuest were all responding to APA and typing a lot, but the younger guys on the bottom were not. So it was probably, they were like, whoa, all of our like veteran leaders are going turbo on APA. What's going on? Is that normal?
Masu was also, I know, fasting for Ramadan.
That's so right.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. So yeah.
I thought you were talking about Senna.
Yeah, when you said fasting, I literally thought you were talking about Senna.
Oh.
I thought you were flaming his CSing ability.
Yeah, because you were talking about his KDA, and then you're saying he's fasting too. So.
No, I got it. Yeah. Ramadan's going on.
Yeah.
I actually really liked Masu's drive episode.
It was amazing.
Yeah, that was super cool. It felt kind of like the most, is serious the right word? Like the most real?
There's been some very real and serious drives. Not all of them have been.
But I mean, this one was like, you know, about his family and like, being born into a literal war zone and moving out. And so,
yeah, I mean, his like, dad's life was in danger, right? Like, in the,
it definitely, I thought it was a really cool piece. And it definitely, for me, who doesn't I didn't know much about Masu. Like, I have a lot of respect for that. Like, that story, his drive and stuff. So, absolutely makes him someone that I want to cheer for.
Those pieces of content, those types of, you know, videos, I feel like are always my favorite. You know, I was hooked immediately as soon as we get into the story, and you just get to learn so much about the players. So definitely recommend that one, because it could use some more views.
Yeah, it is. It's, I always do find it a little bit surprising, but it's kind of sad because it's such good content. And everyone who watches is like, damn, this is amazing. But they don't seem to get that many views.
It's really weird.
Yeah. But either way, Masu had a great series. I think Jan, I mentioned earlier, but his counterpart on the other side, I also thought really, really played well. I think Jensen was a pretty big gap in the mid lane. I thought he really heavily outperformed APA, but this was a pretty back and forth series. Two young ADs playing super well. Jan, especially, I think it was like his Varus and his Kalista games, if I recall correctly off the top of my head, were really, really good, where he was kind of going crazy. And I know he took the loss really hard as he was walking off stage. Like, he looked really emotional, and understandably, right? Because this is, you're putting so much into it. And in that, especially in that final game, it felt like he was kind of their only hope, playing on the Kalista. He was like the only one who was kind of, you know, in a spot to maybe get something done. And he just couldn't quite do it. Cause
hot take, pretty far behind. Jan was the best performing player on Team Liquid.
I don't think that's a hot take.
No?
No.
Nobody's the impact?
No chance. I thought he was like clearly the best. I thought you were going to say best in the series. And then I was like, okay. I actually would have maybe been like...
What do you mean? What's the difference?
Best, well, in the on Team Liquid versus like...
Oh, best teams in the whole series.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Like in the loss, played the best. Mm. That would be a little bit of a hot take. I would have to think about it. But on the TL one, I'm an instant agree.
Yeah. Jan has been so good. Jake, the coach, Spawn, has been wearing the Jan pin on his chest.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, for the whole series. He literally has his face pinned up there.
That's cool.
It's like... it's definitely a huge success story for someone that TL invested so much time into. Obviously, Spawn was his coach during the Team Liquid Academy times as well, so they're super close. I know he's really happy to see the success.
Yep, and especially I think, you know, him performing that well after, I don't think he was as such a standout in the regular season. Even though teams were talking really positively about them, I don't think that their bot lane was doing as well in the regular season. So I thought it was really cool. Very exciting series. We can go to the last one. This was obviously then TL got to then go to the lower bracket, and they absolutely beat up on Dig. Game one was close, and I actually thought Dig should have won game one at a certain point. There was like they had them pretty outranged.
Their early game was really good.
Their early game was really good, and it was the double dragon comp. It was the Smolder Aesol game for TL, so I know from that side they had really good scaling. But they had Jace and the Poke Kai'Sa on the other side, and I felt like they could just, if they played the fights properly, not really allow TL to interact with them. And there was one dragon fight that they did really well. I can't remember if it was like third or fourth dragon or something
I know what you're talking about.
Where they fully poked him out, even though Aesol had like his empowered ult and everything ready. They just couldn't even get in without dying.
Yeah.
And they all got low. They had to back off. And I was like, okay, Dig showed they know how to do it. They just need to keep doing this. Be first to the objectives, poke them out, and kind of like not take the hard engage. And then, as unfortunately Dig has done in a lot of their games, I feel like they make an oopsie, someone gets picked, then they overcommitted to walking in towards the Baron. Like, they, you know, they kind of went way too fast, even though they had all their Poke members alive. Rich just like walked straight into the river and got flanked by Impact. He dies too. Then all of a sudden they take the Baron. Then all of a sudden there's a committed fight and they all die. You know, it's just like the wheels fell off really quickly in game one. But it was after a really good early game. Game two, game three were rough from Dig. Those were not close at all.
Nope.
And it felt like, I felt as though you could see the pressure really got to them. There was some engages. You know, XU had, I think, a really good start in game one. But I want to say it was, I can't remember if it was game two or game three where he was playing the Nocturne game. But there was this one engage by Dragon that was actually crazy.
Like, it was criminal.
Their mid laner and their AD were not even in the river, let alone by the dragon. They were like over behind the dragon pit and like down by bot lane and stuff. They were so far away.
Yeah.
And we're full sending Nocturne ult, you know, into the enemy jungle on the carries with like no follow-up and stuff. There was a few engages like this where it just was, it just seemed like they were really kind of crumbling under the pressure. There's a lot of players on Dig with basically no playoff experience. And I do think it's a bit of a shame because I think they were pretty competitive. I think they did pretty well for expectations, especially during the regular season. But this was not a close series at all.
I think that this team just doesn't look that coordinated. There was also, we did a whole replay breakdown on one of the ones where they warded the same spot like three times. And they saw Core JJ walk into that banana brush by Dragon.
Dude, that was the one.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that as soon as I saw that play, I felt like Dig had no chance in the series. Because
it was so weird. They saw him walk in. They put like three wards there. Like they replaced the ward over and over, so they knew Core was there.
Yeah, well,
jumps on them and they get the full combo.
Yeah, yeah. That was game one going into the second
into the
dragon.
Dragons.
The second dragon. I remember it.
Yeah, it was XU and someone else walked up, right?
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. Like they literally watched him walk into the bush and they just immediately forgot he was in there. They gave him Rel and Gage range. They just both die, lose the
double.
When you lose second dragon against a Smolder Aesol comp, like just FF.
Yeah, it was.
You need an early soul to beat this kind of scaling comp. That's how you beat these comps. And if they're gonna fumble it that early with a better early comp, it's like, I don't know how you're winning this one.
Yeah, it was really weird because Isles was literally fighting Core JJ for that vision for 45 seconds before it even happened. So
yeah, that was definitely a weird one. TL though, on the other side, I think looked quite good. It was, again, like not really close at all. But nope. TL definitely came out looking, you know, very strong. And then that leads us into our two matches that we're actually going to be having this weekend. Do you want to start lower bracket or upper bracket?
Lower
bracket
lower.
It is.
Start right, at the bottom.
So 100 Thieves, TL, we'll start in the gulag. These two teams obviously were the ones that lost in upper bracket. They lost in a pretty different circumstances and had pretty different losers bracket matches as well. They were kind of like, you know, 100 Thieves got super stomped by C9, then close kind of series against Energy. TL had really close series against FlyQuest, then obviously stomped Dig. I feel like TL are kind of coming into this a little bit the favorites, I feel. But Quid was so good in that last 100 Thieves series. I guess it's going to be a hard one to predict.
I would give it to 100 Thieves. Yeah. I think just looking at the state of mid lane is going to be such an uphill battle for TL. Because, I mean, pretty much since APA's joined Team Liquid, he's had a lot of questions raised about, you know, how is he going to measure up to these other mids, and honestly he's kind of struggled. Like, he's not doing terrible or anything, but it's, you usually don't see APA solo carrying the game. He usually will do his job on scaling picks, but he's not really the guy who's winning his lane, finding solo kills, making the game-winning picks and whatnot, and he has had quite a few fumbles in times where his team needs him. So when you compare that up against Quid, who is playing like an absolute demon, just
MVP of the
possessed,
league, probably.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely make a fair argument for it. Like, he just completely gave it to Palafox, who, I mean, if you guys remember, Palafox has always had APA's number, right? Like, Palafox has had some of the craziest stomps against APA at Worlds last year, at the beginning of the split, and then Quid made Palafox completely like a non-factor. Uh-huh. And now it's Quid up against APA. I think that is going to be super tough for them.
So Quid just destroyed APA's father, and now he's come to
Quid is the grandfather.
Yeah, okay. He is. He's really the grandfather.
This lineage that we have here, yeah. The mid lane lineage.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know. Do we put because JoJo put Quid down right there? Down,
yeah.
There,
so we have the little baby. We have the little baby APA, and then the father Palafox, the grandfather Quid, and then the great grandfather, the head of the family JoJo.
Yeah, but mid lane is definitely going to be one of the biggest discussions for this series, because also the champion pool. I mean, in playoffs, you know, we've had APA's Ziggs, Nico, Ahri, Aurelion, Sol. Like, these are all the champions that you already know and associate. And so it does seem like TL has been like, all right, we're going to stay in our lane. We're going to keep on, you know, what you know at least. But for someone like Quid, who has played, I got to check the numbers, but he has had probably the most diverse mid lane champion pool. He had a bunch of melee champions, all of the different mages. He has played whatever they need. It does seem like there's going to be, you know, a champ select advantage for mid as well as in game, which does make the game super hard to play. And then if you give River a very big mid lane advantage, then it makes the whole map really hard to play.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think not even just for APA, but TL in general, I think have clearly settled on, we're just going to play for scaling 5v5. That's generally how they won in the regular season when they branched out from more to more aggressive things and whatnot. I felt like they just lost, and I felt like that was kind of true in playoffs as well. And I think at this point, they don't really have an option to kind of be experimental. So I think they're going to play 5v5 comps with engage scaling, and they're going to do that basically every single game, and they're going to try to force 100 Thieves to be able to make things happen before that scaling takes over, right? Like, I think that's going to be the game plan coming in. I think they absolutely cannot give Ahri to Quid. I thought he was insane on it in the last series. He was making all the charms look point and click. He was dominating 1v1s in the lane. He was making so many plays. That, I think, is the number one champion I think you cannot give to Quid at any cost. Beyond that, I think it is a really interesting series, because I don't think that Impact can really duplicate what Fudge did against Sniper, because he just doesn't play range tops and he doesn't play a lot of these kind of aggressive matchups. So I don't know if he's the guy to put Sniper on the back foot. So it'll be interesting to see if TL try to, you know, put jungle pressure up there, or try to draft for winning 2v2 top or something, try to put Sniper on the back foot, if they feel like that is a significant weakness, as I know that Impact said it was. I will say, though, I think TL's bot lane is better, for sure, and I think if Yon is playing as well as he did in the previous series, I think that could be a significant advantage, because I felt like he was going crazy. I think the way that TL wins is if you can, you know, ban out Quid a little bit to try to protect APA. APA just plays, like, wave clear duty, and you just basically try to pick outscaling picks, and you just try to 5v5, right? Because I do think that they can make things happen there. I think the difficulty is, of course, 100 Thieves has generally a much more creative early game. You know, River is someone that can actually find holes in your defense, who can actually punish people. So to me, that's kind of the battle, is like, can TL keep the game stable and just try to win in 5v5? Or will 100 Thieves be able to kind of make it a little bit more chaotic and kind of run over them early?
Yeah, I think they absolutely have their work cut out for them. I agree with what you were saying as far as the top lane thing, because C9's strat of focusing Sniper, I think, is really effective. However, that's not easy to do. You need to have a team that can play, like, that can enable your top laner. And Impact, pretty much his entire career, he's been like the weak side guy, not because of his own ability, but just what his team has needed, right? He will pick, you know, champs that can just go even in bad matchups. He will create pressure for the rest of his team. But when it's actually, like, he just doesn't ask for the resources. He doesn't have people coming and helping him. He doesn't play a 1v9, which...
And when he gets counterpick, he usually doesn't do an incredible amount with it, even.
Oh, yeah. He had a pretty sick Jax game.
That
but
he lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can, but it's going to be hard, because if we're assuming that Quid is going to have mid prio for most of the series, then watching 100 Thieves when they have mid prio, like, just what River and Quid do together is so hard to play against. Basically, like, if you don't have control of mid lane, it's very hard to play any part of the map, right? Like, even just if you're trying to make a play on the side, you got to do it quick, because there's going to be a mid laner walking at you. It's going to be really hard to maintain vision. So I think if I'm TL, I would just probably try to play through bot the way they did against, who was their five-game series?
FlyQuest,
yeah, sorry. Play like that, pick Varus, Kalista, and just try to have a winning bot lane and snowball through that. I think that could work. I think TL's bot lane has been playing solid. And... yeah, just, you know, hope the solo lanes don't take over.
One thing I will say that surprised me a little bit is everyone makes fun of APA for being, you know, oh, he's a Ziggs one trick, or he's an Aesol Ziggs two trick. But people don't ban them. I find it so bizarre. He's 5-1 on Ziggs, and he's won every Aesol game he's played. And it's like his win rates on everything else are way worse, right? Like, and even just watching him, I feel like he performs well on those champions, you know, pretty much every single time. when he has to be on the more aggressive champions, like when he's playing as Ari or whatever.
I agree with what you're saying. I'm not convinced that he performs super well in those champs as much as...
He's way better than what he is on the other champions.
Sure, but like, okay, every time I see APA playing Ziggs, it's a montage of getting fisted by Vi. Like,
that's the one game against...
Dude, it's multiple games. He's always just getting Vi-ulted everywhere and dying repeatedly. I know he's had like a really shaky ace hole game. I remember... getting solo killed in lane, like just dying to the turret in a top lane dive. I think they're champions that, you know, have a little bit easier time performing mm-hmm. because they just play to scale. So I do think teams could ban out APA and get a bigger advantage there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think it really just comes from, it seems like there's not a lot of respect from his opponents on him. They're like,
there isn't, for sure.
Yeah, there's not. So they're just saying, give him Ziggs. I don't care. I'm going to beat him with anything.
I just think that's an ego thing, though.
It is. Oh, 100% it is.
And I hate that because to me, it's bad logic. It's not saying, oh, he's the best player on the team, so you got to hold him down. You know, it's more like, I think there's the biggest performance gap for him on these two champions to the next champions.
Dude, I mean, You don't have to convince me. I completely agree with you.
He said he was running it down on the Ziggs.
No, he was. He has. But I, at the same time, I'm still saying that it would be good bans. Because trust me, dude, I've had this conversation on teams that I'm on so often, and I'm always taking the side that you're taking. But I can tell you target how pro players think. Is I'm trying to be like, okay, look, we have free bans. This will give us the most bang for our ban, right? It's like, he's going to be worse. But then your mid laner will say, I'm not scared of APA, dude. Like, I'm not scared of his Ziggs. Give him Ziggs, I'll beat him. And it's like, yeah, you probably will, but you'll beat him harder with anything else.
Way harder. And he'll do way less in the team fights. That's the biggest thing to me. Yeah. He still puts out a lot of damage in team fights when he's playing these champions. Yeah. And he's able to pressure towers. Like, he's able to enable them in a way they can't on others.
Yeah. I mean, two bans is a lot. Of an investment, I guess.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, one of the other lanes is, you know, really in a tight spot or something. And it's not like you can focus on, if you really want to have impact versus sniper be a critical matchup and you want the mid lane stuff to be critical, then it's kind of hard to spread between both, I guess.
I mean, I just don't think the impact's that guy, so I don't think that they can get.
So he won the other. He did win the. They also picked it. Jax versus Dignitas. Remember, he won the one auto fight in the brush, yeah. And then he went 8-1-5. And
I guess I just don't care about the.
Dude, I don't think we can like. Yeah. No disrespect to TL. I think the Dig series is not even a statement at all for TL's ability. I think TL played fine. They played League of Legends. Dignitas was doing something else. Okay.
Dignitas absolutely rolled over.
TL played League of Legends with comms, and Dignitas played it without comms.
And I'm not even convinced they were playing League of Legends. They were playing fucking Vacation Simulator.
I mean, Impact is a really good player. It's not a knock on him. Yeah. I just don't think he's the guy that carries the game, right? Like, he's not the guy that you put all the resources into. And I would be happy to be wrong. I would think that would be great. He has some carry picks, some niche picks, but I also think he has some clear bad habits on carries that I think, even in good situations, really have hurt him. Like, when he played the Ignite Rumble, he played that a couple times. I felt he's super overgrouped. Yeah, and I know I've even talked to pros who are like, oh, yeah, when he plays a carry, we know he groups way too much. So they specifically play around that. And they try to just, like, answer around that. It's like, there was a Rumble game he had where he had Ignite Rumble. He got counterpick. He had, like, 9 kills. He was turbo fed. And then he ends up behind the Renekton because he's down, like, 100 CS because he's just hovering his team the whole game instead of farming, right? He doesn't prioritize himself.
Yeah.
His habits are always to sacrifice for the team, and he does this even on a carry when you need to be greedy. You're the guy with 9 kills. You need to keep your lead. You need to be up 2 levels. You need to be just absolutely turbo slamming this Renekton and make him so useless that he can't play the game. And instead, he feels like, you know, drawn to his team, which are great habits when you're playing Cassante or Udyr or Poppy or you're playing Ornn or whatever. But I just think that he has so many of these habits that are built in over like 12 years that he's not greedy enough to be the guy that you give counterpick to, send all your ganks to, and then he wins you the game. I don't know. I mean, I'll be
just how he is.
Wrong.
He's honestly too nice of a person. Like, I've played with him. He's one of the players I would absolutely play with again. He's just such a good teammate. He's he'll always try to take the burden, right? If there's a situation where someone has to take the short stick, he's like jumping on that. And like you said, it's not what you need when you're on the carry. His teammates need to be doing that for him. They need to be like, no impact, look, like, do not group. If we die, that's on us, bro. Like,
yep,
you got to eat, get your lead. We'll figure it out.
So it'll be an exciting one. I think this could be a close series. I can definitely see, I can easily see mid lane going horrible and then TL just gets smacked. But I do think if they could play stable, I think TL could win 5v5.
I think every series left in playoffs, no matter who wins, who loses, upper bracket, are all going to be really close series. I think it's very competitive.
Totally. And I think one of the big weaknesses of 100 Thieves that I do think is more of a strength for TL is I think 100 Thieves are like the hands team for sure, but they make some dumb decisions sometimes, man. Like their macros is something super questionable. Should Contracts have ever even had a chance to steal that Baron in game 4? Should Sniper have overstayed in the base? Should they have gotten, you know what I mean? There's when they lose, you're like, oh, that was a silly choice. Oh, that was a silly choice. You know, like they do these silly things. And that is kind of like what you want from that like stereotypical rookie team where, oh, you want them to play perfect, but it's like you'd rather them be, you know, amazing mechanically and have some oopsies that they can learn from. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that is kind of this team. So I do think, you know, if TL cannot get ran over early, 100 Thieves might make some silly choices, might make some big mistakes that TL could capitalize on and kind of use some of their experience to maybe take advantage of them.
All right, predictions then. At the beginning, you were thinking Team Liquid. Are you convinced the other way now?
I mean, I think this is like, if I had to really put something on the line, I think I'm probably more on the 100 Thieves side, but I think TL could win. I'm in for TL just because I think it's kind of like, it's kind of fun, and I think if Yon plays the way he did in the previous couple series, I think they actually could win. But I think, you know, the safe money is probably on 100 Thieves just based off Quid River and the advantages that they should get early.
Yeah. I would give it 3-1 100 Thieves. Another intangible is like 100 Thieves has the craziest mental of any team as far as resilience, dude. Yeah. Like losing game 4 to Energy off of like getting Baron stolen, just the worst kind of loss ever, and then laughing about it as they're going off stage, like, what is that, bro? I've never seen that in my life. Like
monk mental,
seriously. That, like, they were even laughing, I think, with Contracts about
yep,
it.
Yep.
Like, who does that, dude? That
I just is love so League of Legends. It's funny.
I know, that's awesome. That is so cool. Like, that is such a like giant strength for them. Like that is,
yeah,
so cool.
What Migas is referring to, if you go back and you watch right after game 4, there was shots of the players walking off stage and the two teams were kind of like interspersed as they were walking off. And yeah, River and Quib were just laughing it up with the Energy guys, like, oh, haha, we shouldn't have given you that one. You know, like we really trolled it or whatever. But it's just like most players are just complete stoic after a game like that, look so depressed, you mm-hmm. know? So yeah, no. And then they bounced right back and they slammed them in the fifth game.
Yeah, they're just having so much fun being pro league players. It's so cool to watch.
Yep, that is awesome. That series is going to be really, really exciting. That's the lower bracket one. The upper bracket banger is going to be Fly C9, which should be, I think, really exciting. C9 definitely looked way more dominant in their first series, but you can argue, oh, is it strength of opponent? Is it play? Is it this? Is it that? This one is going to be, I think, really, really exciting because I'm not sure, you know, what C9 is going to come into this with like kind of game plan wise, because they had clearly such a prepared like game plan that they wanted to do against Sniper and what they were looking to actually kind of like slam home against them. That's not something you can really do against Bupo. And when Fudge was actually casting with us a little bit for the Fly TL series, he was even talking about with Bupo how it's like really hard to actually get the good picks against him because you don't really know what he's going to play, and he can play all these weird things. So like blind picking against him is really hard. Sometimes you have to counter pick and then just end up in like an even matchup just because you need to see what he picks first to not get counter picked and put in some really weird spot. So I definitely don't think they can replicate what they did against 100 Thieves as far as like winning through top lane. But if they're playing as well as they did, I still think they are.
I just think it's up to, does Cloud9 turn back into a pumpkin? Because they were playing so much better.
Yeah.
Then they have like the whole split. This is the best. That was the best Cloud9 by far that we've seen all year, for sure. So if they can keep that together, and if like the meme, the we're back, like sticks for all of playoffs, then you're eating
I might be eating a lemon. Yeah.
I'm hopeful.
That Kobe will
have been getting burned a couple times this split from that hope. For sure. We've had several instances of Cloud9 being back and then not being back right afterwards.
How back they were was exaggerated.
Yeah, their backness was greatly exaggerated for sure. But I don't know if you are looking at strength of opponents, right? Like C9 stomped 100 Thieves. 100 Thieves beat
Energy.
They beat Energy, and then FlyQuest had a close series against Liquid that they barely won. So I don't know. I think Cloud9 should be favored, Smile, but
I really want to see about the Jensen JoJo matchup, because Jensen has been playing so well, aside from all the trash talk that he's done as well. And I want to see, because JoJo's got a champ pool that can try and take advantage. Jensen is very clear of what he's going to play, you know? Like, oh, Azir is global banned, too bad, and Orianna gets permabanned by your opponents, and then you just keep on going down like the stepladder of control mage, it feels like. And even if you see it coming, he's done so well with them. But I feel like JoJo and Blabber are the type of duo to make a plan of like, all right, let's shit on Jensen this game. So, you know, maybe it's not, oh yeah, then games versus 100 Thieves, they had this clear plan versus Sniper. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be the same thing. Do a similar one, but target Jensen, or you know, identify some point on FlyQuest other than that you really want to leverage, because I think that shows so many returns, especially like in a best of series. If you can also start to make a player doubt themselves because you're focusing, everyone on your whole team knows, like, all right, they're crafting their whole plan to come mid and get on me. Then you start feeling extra pressure, and everyone's looking at you, and they're like, yeah, what can we do? And you're like, I'm fine. It's everything. I can handle it. And that can kind of snowball. So I think that one to me is going to be the most important matchup.
What about the jungle? I think jungle is so interesting because I feel like this is the least hype around Blabber in a long time, because everyone's talking about River, everyone's talking about Inspired, and he's going to be going up against Inspired. So I think there's a little bit of an opportunity for Blabber to kind of like, you know, reprove himself here a bit, as I feel like everyone has kind of just been not really talking about him.
Some stuff from the 100 Thieves series I really enjoyed Blabber doing is he would immediately react when they saw River. If River showed anywhere, then Blabber would skip his other two camps. The one I'm remembering is, you know, River goes for the Kindred gank mid. Blabber immediately, as soon as he shows, like, gets off of the blue buff that he was doing, goes straight bottom lane, and they get the first blood, ganking the bottom lane that just pushed up because they saw the Kindred still in mid. Like he's always like immediately ready to react. It feels like he's not stuck in the, I got to keep up my farm, I got to, you know, keep up my full clear at all costs or anything. And then he had the really smart hover just outside of vision, beside mid lane, and flash in, and for their kill.
Oh, that, yeah. The Lee Sin Taliyah gank. That was so clean.
I loved that so much.
Did you guys see when they showed the replay as well? They showed the vision line, and it wasn't even just that he was out of it. Oh, you did? Did you?
Yeah, I did the replay of it.
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't know if you saw this as well, but it was like not even just that he was out of vision. He was literally like perfectly on the line. It was like he was the exact distance that you could be without getting seen. I thought that was so impressive because it made it so instantaneous.
Right? That's why I pulled it, and that's why, because it also is the other level of why Quid is like, oh, the seismic shove isn't gonna kill me. He's not gonna flash because he doesn't know Blabber is there to flash in, and again, it was so good.
Most junglers, it's like if that's solo queue, you're probably like three steps back, and you wouldn't even be able to like get in that fast off the shove, right? So you'd be a little bit too late. He could have flashed in between and probably got out.
Oh God, tell me. That's why I pulled the replay. I was like, damn, that.
I'm not trying to explain to you. I'm just saying, like, for the viewers, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. It was so cool, and that's one of those things that is not really appreciable when you are watching and you have full vision versus when you are playing. You're like, how the hell did Lee Sin get here that fast? Like, he was a pixel away from being in vision. And that's something I think it was you were talking about. Zix was teaching you guys in one of those things where it was like, this minion only sees vision here, so this is where you can sneak into the brush and things like that. It's so hard to appreciate when you're watching with God mode and you see everything, whereas when you're in the game, you're like, how the hell is he in that brush? Like, I was right there. I should have been able to see it, you know?
Yeah. The vision thing is honestly the biggest difference between playing and watching League is, like you said, God mode. You see everything. I think sleeping on Blabber is like probably the biggest mistake you could possibly make as a team, because especially to me, it seems like the jungle meta is going a little bit more toward carry style champs, or not carry in the sense of Graves, Nidalee, really, but like Lee Sin, Xin Zhao type champs. And I think Blabber does really well on those kind of champs, the ones who, you know, maybe not get all the resources, but they get more than a Maokai or a Sedge or a Rell. I think that Inspired's been playing a lot of that, like the supportive style of champions. Mm-hmm. And if it comes down to those matchups, I would probably favor Inspired. But if it's going to be like a Lee Sin type thing, because Lee Sin's looked really strong all playoffs, and Blabber can play that champ, I think that would give C9 a really big advantage.
So in the Liquid series, Inspired played one Sejuani and then two Viego games of Igame and a Jarvan. We also didn't really talk about him much in that previous series, but I was kind of curious. Like, did you guys think he actually performed well in that one? Because I thought he was pretty bad in the first Viego game, where he got those two kills really early on, then felt like he did nothing the entire game with that. And his Jarvan game, it felt like he was trying to play like River and super over-forcing. Like, his Jarvan game, I remember him skipping so many camps.
Oh, God, when he was waiting in the down bottom for, like,
a minute and a half or something. It was crazy. Like, maybe that's an exaggeration, but it had to be at least a minute. Like, it had to be a minute. It was nuts. Like, he was in that brush forever and just not farming anything. And then he had the one over by blue buff where he, like, EQ and then, like, ulted over the wall onto a carry, like, a full screen and a half away from his team with no abilities. And I think he even flash ulted and then died with no abilities. Like, he, like, I got the carry. And then it's like, I have no abilities. And then just dies to him.
That's the classic Jarvan.
And there was a blast cone right next to him, too.
That made it even worse. He's blast coned out and then killed him. So I felt like he didn't have his best series. His last Viego game, I know, was good, where he got first blood in that one as well. Like, a lot of these games, he was getting early kills, and that one he definitely made it happen. But I didn't feel like he looked as comfortable, especially in the Jarvan game, where it was clear he was trying to move away from his style, because everyone talks about Inspired is really good, but he's very predictable, because he's going to prioritize camps. He's never going to take risks. He's going to, like, just execute really well in the plays he goes for, and, you know, like, go for really high percentage plays. And if it's like go for a gank and give up camps to do that, he's just going to take his camps. Like, he was clearly trying to kind of, like, break that, I felt like, with the Jarvan, but the Jarvan was not hitting.
Yeah. Travis did a video with where he had people rank jungle tier lists, and he had Spawn, the TL coach, and Impact there. Everybody was putting Inspired number one or number two. It was like most people put River and Inspired number one, number two.
Yep.
And then Blabber below, probably because of the way this season has gone.
Yep.
But in playoffs, if you're looking at just those two series that both of these teams won in the upper brackets, I would say Blabber was better.
I mean, Blabber, River did nothing against Blabber in their series, but it'll be interesting. Blabber might be able to kind of reestablish that dominance. What do you guys think as far as predictions? Are you guys kind of on the Cloud9 side?
Yeah.
I'm definitely.
Do
on
I go with my lemons?
Oh, we can almost taste the lemons. I don't even remember what a lemon looks like at this point.
I think you guys are too happy with your coin flip. Cloud9's back, maybe. So maybe I'll hope that
we gotta enjoy it while it's there.
Maybe I'll hope that that they're not back.
Comes up tails next
week again, and they don't play as well as they did versus 100 Thieves. All right, I'm gonna stick with my FlyQuest.
You're gonna fly,
boys. Yeah, keep that lemon out of my mouth.
Yeah, I think if the teams both play like they did last week, I think C9's gonna clap them.
Yeah,
I think C9 looked by far the best in the first week, but remains to be seen if they can replicate that. I'm gonna go 3-1. Yeah, 3-1 C9. I was gonna say 3-0, but I'm like, nah. I think FlyQuest will for sure get a game.
Your Captain Flowers is angry.
Yeah, Flowers is in a firm belief that everything has to be a 3-0. No matter what, he just predicts 3-0 for 100% of series. Whether he believes it or not, it's a 3-0.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what score I would give it. I would say C9 win. Maybe I'll say 3-2.
Yeah,
I think some things could come down to draft. I think there are some wild cards on FlyQuest, mostly Bwipo. I think that's hard to prepare for. whatever Boho's going to whip out.
I kind of have a question. If I'm going to do game score, FlyQuest have side selection?
They should have side selection. They're the higher seed.
Yeah. So I'm going to go 3-2 then because we get side selection first.
So you're just going to win every game on your sides.
Boom.
Boom. What side are they going to pick? What side are you saying you think they have an advantage on? Blue or red?
I think we need blue because Jensen's got less of a champ pool than JoJo. So I think the blue will be good for us.
You need red. FlyQuest needs red.
Or Whippo counter?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
are you trying to do some mind games on me right now?
You're not the coach. Why am I trying to mind game you? No, I mean, just like if you have some, like Fudge said, it's hard to pick against Whippo. You don't like blind picking stuff. I think you want red side. Like, let Whippo get some weird counter pick. Let him whip out Rengar or something.
I thought C9 looked so good the first week that if there wasn't Whippo on that team, I would have been like, it could be a 3-0 if they played like they did. But because it's Whippo, I'm just like, Whippo's going to have a game where he's going to cook some stuff no matter what. And, I mean, if C9 doesn't play like they did last week, maybe they get stomped. But all I can go off of is really what we saw in the last series.
Fair enough.
So what's you're going 3-2? 3-2, 3-2, 3-1. There you go. Two Cloud Niners hoping to not eat some lemons. But that's going to be pretty much it for this episode of the Dive. Remember, playoffs is going to be back on Friday. I just looked this up. Which series is on Friday? I believe it's the lower bracket one first. Yes, it is TL 100 Thieves. That is going to be 1 p.m. Pacific on Friday. And then, of course, Cloud9 versus FlyQuest is going to be on Saturday. Those are going to be really, really fun. If there are tickets still available, I will grab them because those ones are going to sell out pretty fast. It should be a good one. And remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of Dive. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcast platform. Keep sending us your questions on Twitter with the hashtag TheDiveLOL. I think we're going to do some episodes in the break between LCS and MSI. So maybe we can do some more question episodes or something like that in the downtime. So definitely get those questions in. And we will see you this weekend for more playoffs.